Welcome to Ask JTF. This is Chaim Ben Pesach from the Jewish Task Force. On this program, we attempt to answer the questions each week from our great JTFers. Before we get to that, this program is dedicated to a refuah shlema, complete recovery, for Sharon Mitman, Shlomo Ben Sara, and Dorit Bat Sara, and to Ilui Neshamot, elevating of the souls, for Malka Bat Meir, Allegra Bat Shlomo, Daniel Nankin, Victor Chazdai, Pesach Zeev Ben Dov, Lunita Adler, Shifra Hoffman, Ruven Hoffman, Barry Hoffman, Harav Meir Kahana, Harav Binyamin Kahana, Tzipora Fegi Bat Liba, Yosef Ben Meir, Robert Mitman, Dennis Shore, Helen Friedman, and Charles Zolot. Now let's get to our questions from our great JTFers, Bezrat Hashem, God willing. And we start out with Ron from Israel, who is really a great JTFer. He's a leader in JTF, a leader and a spokesman for JTF in the land of Israel. And Ron writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, how did you first hear Rabbi Kahana and the JDL? What was your first mission when you joined? Thanks and God bless you, Ron. Well, I knew of Rabbi Kahana and the JDL because they were receiving massive media attention in 1970, 1971. And I was a 14-year-old kid, but JDL had already been in the news for a couple of years already and was front-page news. JDL was a huge story in the news media. So I knew of JDL from newspapers, from television, from radio. It was a very, very big story, and it stirred a great deal of debate in the American Jewish community. My first mission in JDL, the very first thing that I did, there was a Jews for Jesus office on the ground floor on Broadway and 72nd Street in Manhattan on the Upper West Side. And they had a big display window where they had so-called proofs from the Bible that Yeshu is the Messiah, you know, the lies where they deliberately mistranslate the Bible and distort what's written in the Bible and literally mistranslate what is written in the Bible. Absurd lies. And they had an office, again, on the Upper West Side, which is a place where Jews are extremely assimilated, and so there was, you know, there was plenty of opportunity there for them to fool and trick Jews into leaving their faith. And I went by with another JDL member, and we had bricks. We had a bag, and inside the bag I had a brick, and the other JDL member had a brick. And the two of us went by at night, that ground floor office, and we threw the bricks through the window and smashed their display window. We smashed and destroyed their display window with the bricks. That was the first thing that I did in the JDL, the first out of hundreds of things that we wound up doing in that great organization. I just want to say briefly, as far as JDL is concerned, because people sometimes forget, and this is something you're going to hear over and over again on this program, hopefully. I hope that I'll get a chance to repeat this over and over again. It was the JDL, an organization created by Morinu v'Rabbeinu Harav Meir David Kahana, Zecher Tzaddik v'Kadosh Livracha, Hashem Yikom Damo, our beloved Rabbi Meir Kahana, may God avenge his blood. This great organization did quite a few things, but our greatest accomplishment was that we freed roughly 2 million Soviet Jews. Now, unfortunately, many of them went to the United States and other countries outside of Israel. Our goal was to get the Jews to go from the Soviet Union to Israel, or from Russia, what is today Russia, to Israel. And over 1 million Jews did in fact make Aliyah. They did in fact go from Russia and other republics in the Soviet Union, in the former Soviet Union, to Israel. So over a million Jews were saved and brought to Israel because of the JDL's activities. Also, in addition to that, though, maybe 800,000 or 900,000 other Soviet Jews went to the United States, Canada, Western countries. That was not our goal, but that also happened. just so that you'll be well aware of how much of an influence JDL played, because I see people speaking about the Soviet Jewry movement and saying all types of nonsense about what really freed the Soviet Jews. The Soviet Jews were not freed because the Soviet Union fell, because the Soviet bureaucrats and the communist bureaucrats that were in charge of the visa offices and handing out visas were the same bureaucrats who were in the same bureaucrats were in that office even after the Soviet Union fell, and you had Russia under Boris Yeltsin. You had the same bureaucrats. You would have had to get visas from the same bureaucrats and from the same people. They could have just refused to give visas. And if not for JDL, no one would have known and no one would have even paid attention to the issue. They would have gotten away with it. They could have just refused to let the Jews out, and no one would have even known. The reason they were forced to permit free immigration of the Jews was because of the JDL, and because JDL was interfering with their relationship with the United States. JDL was wrecking the U.S.-Soviet relationship, what was called détente in those days, the U.S.-Soviet relationship. JDL was ruining that relationship through bombings, through violence in many cases, and illegal activities in many cases in order to save our brothers and sisters, and also through mass demonstrations and things that were lawful protests. And yes, it is an obligation. It is an obligation to do anything and everything when Jews are in danger. When Jews are in danger, if it is effective, and if it will save your fellow Jews, you are required to do anything and everything. And the law that you must abide by is Torah law. That's the first and most important law that you must abide by. And Torah law clearly states you shall not stand idly by your brother's blood. Jerry Goodman, who was the executive director of the National Conference on Soviet Jewry, that was the establishment organization. Who were the organizations that were part? It was an umbrella group for all the Jewish establishment organizations. B'nai B'rith, the Anti-Defamation League, the American Jewish Congress, the American Jewish Committee, Hadassah, AIPAC. They were all part of the National Conference on Soviet Jewry. And Jerry Goodman, who was the executive director who ran the National Conference on Soviet Jewry, who was in charge of their Soviet Jewry campaign for all the big Jewish establishment organizations. I debated Jerry Goodman on CNN's Crossfire program. They had a program called Crossfire. And I debated Jerry Goodman on September 3rd, 1986, the day after we tear-gassed the Moiseev Ballet at Lincoln Center. And Jerry Goodman admitted in that debate, he conceded in the debate with me that it was the JDL that was pushing Jewish leaders and Jewish organizations into action on the Soviet Jewry issue. By the way, if anybody can get a hold of that program that we did on September 3rd, 1986 on Crossfire on CNN, I would greatly appreciate it if you could get a copy of it. I've been unable to do so. But Jerry Goodman, who was the establishment leader and spokesman, he conceded that it was the JDL that pushed Jewish leaders into action on this issue, because they were ignoring this issue. They were busy with their usual self-hating, left-wing, intermarried, assimilated agenda of helping everybody except their fellow Jews, and often helping the enemies of the Jewish people, most of the time helping the enemies of the Jewish people. That's what Jewish establishment organizations do. They're traitors. They're self-hating Jews. And that's what they do. But they could not ignore the issue of Soviet Jewry because we had made it such a prominent issue. It was all over television, it was all over the radio, it was the front page of the newspapers. You couldn't ignore the issue. And so Jewish establishment organizations couldn't pretend that they're really Jewish organizations if they would ignore this issue, and their own members were asking them, hey, we keep seeing Soviet Jews oppressed and persecuted, and we see this in the news now because of the JDL. What are we doing about this? So there was no way they could avoid the issue, and they had to act. We forced them to act. And that's why Soviet Jews were freed. William Berkowitz, who was the president of the New York Board of Rabbis, he also conceded in a debate with Morenu Verabenu Harav Kahana Zatzal. He had a debate with him, and he invited him as a guest, and they, in effect, were debating, and he conceded that it was the JDL that pushed the New York Board of Rabbis and other Jewish organizations into action. So Jerry Goodman, William Berkowitz, They all admitted that it was the JDL that made the difference. B'nai B'rith Monthly, which is sometimes called B'nai B'rith International. It's a magazine put out by B'nai B'rith, which is the largest American Jewish organization, a self-hating, evil Jewish organization, the worst B'nai B'rith, scum. And they always condemned and attacked the JDL and called them terrorists and called us racists and Nazis and everything under the sun. These are the same beasts who did nothing while over 6 million Jews were murdered during the Holocaust, along with all the other Jewish organizations, all the Jewish establishment organizations. None of them did anything to save 6 million Jews during the Holocaust. Not only did they do nothing, they actually sabotaged attempts by right-wing Jewish activists to save the Jews during the Holocaust. They sabotaged those efforts. But B'nai B'rith Monthly, which is the magazine for B'nai B'rith, they had an article in April 1985. They had an article where they conceded that it was the JDL that pushed the Jewish establishment organizations into action on the issue of Soviet Jewry. They admitted, B'nai B'rith admitted that. Jerry Goodman admitted it. William Berkowitz admitted it. So there's no question that if not for the JDL, the same thing that happened to 6 million Jews during the Holocaust, as shocking and horrible as it is, they easily could have been saved if the death camps had been bombed, if the rail lines leading to the death camps had been bombed. The Holocaust could have been avoided. The Germans would not have been able to carry out their mass murder. They would have been unable to. And all of this could have happened during the Holocaust, but American Jews, who were so powerful, who controlled Hollywood and controlled much of the news media and had tremendous power and influence on Wall Street and everywhere else, and were tremendous donors to the Democrat Party of Franklin Delano Roosevelt, Yimach Shmo V'Zichro, may his name and memory be obliterated, they could easily have gotten the United States to take action to save Soviet Jews, to save the Jews during the Holocaust, easily. The Holocaust could have been stopped, but American Jews did nothing. The blood of 6 million Jews is not only on the hands of the Germans and the Europeans who murdered the 6 million, but also on the hands of American Jews who did nothing. And so the same thing that happened during the Holocaust would have happened to Soviet Jews. They never would have been freed if it had not been for the JDL and for Rabbi Meir Kahana, Zecher Tzadik V'Kadosh Livracha. Thank you very much for your question, Ron. And now we go to Ram770, who writes me a question in Hebrew. He writes, Shalom Chaim Hayakar, Mashlomcha, Madatcha lehakin tnua beretz Yisrael, she'ata bintayim lo beretz Yisrael, ani makim yachad im, he gives names of people, I don't know if I should give the names, tnua she'tilachem leman eretz Yisrael, Hashlema imata be'ad. So Ram asks me in Hebrew, what's your view of if I form an organization with various people that he mentions here, if I form this organization, if I put together an organization or for the whole land of Israel. I don't know, Ram. I don't know what the organization would be capable of doing. I don't know what you would be capable of doing, so I don't know. Ani lo yodea. Let me answer him briefly in Hebrew because I think Ram will understand better in Hebrew. That's why he wrote the question in Hebrew. Ram, ani lo yodea ma yesh, ani lo yodea ma hatnua hazot haita osa o yeilut shel tnua kazot. Meachar she ani lo yodea, ani lo yechol lanot la sheela shelcha. Ani modeh lecha Ram. I thank you, Ram, for your question. And now we go on to Noah Hyde, who is a great JTFer, who writes, and I quote, thank you for reestablishing the SJTF. Which modern-day rabbi you recommend whose lessons we should listen to, unquote. Noah Hyde, how I wish I could answer this question. I just don't know enough about English-speaking rabbis whom I would recommend. You know, my views are not the accepted views of English-speaking American rabbis in this generation because I'm a Kahanist. And I believe it's because, well, anyway, regardless of the reason, I don't know enough about English-speaking rabbis. Now, I follow rabbis in Israel, like Harav Dov Lior, who is the main rabbi in Kiryat Arba, Hebron. I follow Harav Dov Lior, for example, but I don't think he speaks English. As far as I know, his videos are all in Hebrew, and he might have done. There may be some subtitles on some of his videos, but I don't think it's enough for you to get the type of guidance that you really need from a rabbi. The way I need guidance from rabbis, the way all of us need guidance from rabbis. So I really don't know what to tell you. I really don't know. There are many rabbis who do shiurim are lessons and give lectures in English, which you can find on YouTube. You can find hundreds of rabbis that do that in English. But you have to pick and choose, because I don't know enough, and I don't want to recommend somebody that may say things that I think could be bad or harmful, because I think there are rabbis that do say things that are bad and harmful in this generation, unfortunately. So I wish I could answer your question, but I just don't know enough to answer. Thank you, Noah Chai. And now we go to Chabad Kahanes, who is another great JTFer, and he writes, and I quote, "How long before the Bennett-Lapid-Abbas coalition falls apart?" Unquote. Well, Chabad Kahanes, of course, is referring to the current government of Israel of Naftali Bennett, Yair Lapid, and Abbas. They have a coalition government. Abbas, of course, is the head of the Ra'am, Arab terrorist party, which supports Hamas. I don't know. I don't know how long they'll last. I think they all have a stake in continuing to keep this government going for as long as possible, because if it fails, they're going to be blamed for the failure, and they'll pay a price in the next election. So I don't think they don't want an election. They want to try to keep the government together as long as possible. So that could lead to a government that lasts several years. On the other hand, there are so many contradictions, and there's so many different fighting factions in the party that and the coalition is so fragile that anything could happen. So I honestly just don't know. I don't know the answer. Ani lo navi ve ani lo ben navi, which means I'm not a prophet and I'm not the son of a prophet. So what will happen in the future, I honestly don't know. Thank you very much, Chabad Kahanist. And now we go to another great JTFer, Hirvatsky Noahide, who writes, and I quote, "Righteous Gentiles are permitted by Torah law to live in Israel. Do you believe some Arabs will accept the seven Noahide laws as an alternative to being expelled?" Unquote. Question is it acceptable to give them that option? I don't believe that you can be considered to be a Ben Noach if you have ulterior motives, like not like someone says, yeah, I'll be a Ben Noach because I don't want to be expelled. But in reality, they're still Muslims and they still hate the Jewish people. The Arabs do hate the Jews. They believe in the Islamic religion, which is a religion of vicious hatred and mass murder and genocide, a religion of a pathological liar and a pedophile and a mass murderer and a rapist, Muhammad. And the question is, should they be offered that option when the time comes? And I don't, you know, and if any Gentile who sincerely wants to observe the Noahide laws, of course should be encouraged to do so. And of course we should help in any way we can. But the Arabs have already proven their murderous intentions. And there's already a war going on between the Arabs and the Jews in Israel. This is a war that's been going on for 150 years. When you're at war with a nation, just because you're stronger than the enemy, if the enemy suddenly says, okay, you know, I'll accept this, that's not acceptable. The fact that they live in Israel endangers Jewish lives, endangers the Jewish character of the state, and has a very bad influence on the state. There are some Jews who want to convert the Arabs to Judaism, God forbid. I mean, there are all types of crazy things going on. Now, by the way, I do believe that there are very rare exceptions of Arabs, for instance, who have converted to Judaism. There are some exceptions, and of course we welcome sincere converts, and Arabs who may want to accept, if they want to accept the seven Noahide laws. There may be very rare exceptions, but I think for almost all Arabs, if they were a loyal part of a campaign to exterminate the Jewish people, I don't think they have any place in the land of Israel. Thank you very much, Hirvatsky. And now we go on to Binyamin Yisrael, another great JTFer, who writes, and I quote, comment on Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin. Well, he's an affirmative action Secretary of Defense, not very bright to say the least, and he's a black Jew hater, and he was a joke as a general, and he's a joke as Secretary of Defense, and of course he's a disaster for America, for Israel, and for the world. Two, these are various things that Binyamin wants me to comment on. Two, second gentleman, quote unquote, Doug Efoff, comment separately for what you think of him and my name for him, unquote. Well, I think your name for him is appropriate. I think that he is a vile, self-hating Jew. He's married to, by the way, for those of you who don't know who we're talking about, he's the husband of Vice President Kamala Harris. He's, of course, aside from the fact that he intermarried with a black Jew hater, Kamala Harris, he himself is a self-hating, assimilated, evil, vicious, disgusting Jewish anti-Semite. It's a very dangerous situation, because Kamala Harris could easily become president, because Joe Biden is senile and who knows when he's going to drop dead. So there's a danger that Kamala Harris will become president, and then we'll have the husband of the president will be a self-hating Jew. That's not a good situation for Jews. Three, Rex Tillerson. Binyamin wants me to comment on Rex Tillerson. Rex Tillerson was the Secretary of State, the anti-Semitic Secretary of State, who made many anti-Israel statements and policies under Donald Trump, and Trump eventually he eventually resigned, and Trump got rid of him. They didn't get along at all, and Tillerson was involved with Exxon Oil, which, you know, the giant oil companies, of course, are very anti-Israel and have worked for many years to destroy Israel, and they do anything that the Arabs whom they do business with demand of them, and they'll do anything to please the Saudis and their other business partners, who of course are committed to the destruction of Israel, and of course they also want to drill and export oil from Iran, from anyone. I mean, they would sell their mother to make another dollar in profit. They're the lowest of the low, and so is Rex Tillerson. Yimach shmo v'zichro, shem reshaim yirkav, may his memory, may the memory of the wicked rot, and may his memory be obliterated. And Binyamin asked me for Mike Pompeo. Mike Pompeo was the Secretary of State under Donald Trump, and he pursued terrible policies for Israel. He was one of the people who pursued the policies of getting Israel to sign treaties with Persian Gulf countries. Very, very dangerous. And Mike Pompeo also worked on the Trump Netanyahu suicidal so-called peace plan, where there would be a so-called Palestinian state, even though there is no Palestine, there are no Palestinians, and where Israel would retreat more or less to what would roughly work out to be the pre-1967 borders. Israel would give up 90-95% of Judea and Samaria, God forbid. Israel would give up parts of pre-1967 Israel, the Negev, and other areas, God forbid. It would be a catastrophe that is just unspeakable. That was the Trump-Netanyahu peace plan, God forbid. Thank God Mike Pompeo, Secretary of State, is no longer Secretary of State. The guy who replaced him is also terrible, but Pompeo was a catastrophe. Five, John Bolton. John Bolton John Bolton was good on Iran. He wanted military action to destroy Iran's nuclear program. He wanted the United States to do it, and if the United States wouldn't do it, he wanted Israel to do it. So he's good on Iran. But he also supported a so-called Palestinian state, so on that issue, he was bad. Six, Mike Pence. Mike Pence, of course, was the vice president under Trump, a complete phony, fraud, opportunist disaster. Was never pro-Israel, wanted a so-called Palestinian state, strongly supported the Trump-Netanyahu so-called peace plan. Terrible person, terrible phony. Seven, boxer Muhammad Ali. Muhammad Ali was a Muslim, black Muslim, Jew hater, and white hater. He was a racist against whites and hated the Jews, and he was a black Muslim. So he was an evil lowlife. Eight, Carl McCall. Carl McCall was a black Jew hater in New York State politics, and like all the black Jew haters, of course, supporter of Farrakhan, supporter of Jesse Jackson, supporter of Al Sharpton, supporter of all the black Jew haters, and naturally, he got most of his money from Jewish donors, and Jews, self-hating Jews supported him. Just an example of what a sick generation we live in. Thank you very much, Binyamin. And now we go to Nekama, who is also a great JTFer, who writes, and I quote, Chaim, one, why is Shemitah so important? Unquote. Shemitah is where the land, where we don't farm the land once every 7 years, and it's important because it's one of the key commandments in the Torah. And some of the rabbis even say that the destruction of the temples, one of the reasons for the destruction of the temples, was that the Jews did not properly keep Shemitah. So it is, there's no question that it's important. On the other hand, in the name of Shemitah, because you're not allowed to buy from Jewish farmers during the year of Shemitah, you're not allowed to buy from them. You're not supposed to buy from Jewish farmers in Israel, because we're not supposed to be, Jews are not supposed to be farming their land. But in the name of doing that, Jews buy from Arab farmers, from our enemies who want to exterminate us, which I think is even worse. And so Harav Kook and other rabbis have said that we should be supporting Jewish agriculture, and this is a time of war, an emergency time, and that Shemitah only kicks in really when all the Jews return to Israel, or at least the vast majority of Jews return to Israel. And so there was a question about whether or not how we should be observing this, and certainly we should never, never, never buy products from people who hate us. Never buy produce from Arabs in Gaza or anywhere else, or Arabs anywhere else. Never. We should never employ our enemies. We should never buy from our enemies. And it doesn't matter if it's Arabs or anti-Semites anywhere else, or self-hating Jews, for that matter, like Ben and Jerry's. We should never buy Ben and Jerry's, which is unhealthy and garbage. People shouldn't be eating ice cream anyway. Ice cream is very unhealthy. It's suicidal to eat ice cream. It's complete garbage. But another reason not to buy it, aside from the health reasons, is because Ben and Jerry's are the ultimate example of Jewish anti-Semites, vicious haters of Israel. So we should never, never buy from enemies of our people under any circumstances, even during Shnat Shemitah, the year of Shemitah. And Nekama writes, and I quote, why is it that the ultra-Orthodox fail to recognize the miracles surrounding return of Jewish sovereignty in the land of Israel, with some extremists even claiming this act was initiated at the hands of the Satan, unquote? Because these Jews have gotten used to the Galut, and they've come to believe, as Moreno Rabbeinu Harav Kahana Zatzal always used to say about Satmar and people like that say this, these sick Jews have come to believe that the Galut is the natural place for the Jewish people, that living outside of Israel, in the exile, they've gotten so used to it. Also, they're like the Meraglim. The Meraglim were the spies. Moshe Rabbeinu sent out 12 spies to spy the land before the Jews were supposed to go in and liberate the land from the Canaanites. And 10 out of the 12 spies came back and said that we cannot liberate the land, that we're like grasshoppers among giants, and they scared the people, and so the people did not want to liberate the land, and that led to the Jews having to die in the desert. That generation, from all males from the age of 20 to 60, had to die in the desert because of that terrible sin, Chet HaMeraglim, the sin of the spies. These are like the spies, these are like the Meraglim, who in the name of Judaism want us to return. The spies wanted the Jews to return to the land of Egypt. And they regretted the fact that the Jews came out of Egypt and were going to go to the land of Israel. They didn't want the Jews to go to the land of Israel. And the same story with these cowardly, ghetto-minded Jews who think that Williamsburg and Muncie and Borough Park are places where Jews are supposed to live instead of Eretz Yisrael at a time when we have Jewish sovereignty in Eretz Yisrael. Very, very sick, very demented type of thinking. And some of it is cowardice, and some of it is also the fact that they just would rather live in Borough Park and Muncie and what's the other place where they want to live? And Williamsburg. They'd rather live there, speaking Yiddish. And Yiddish, again, many wonderful Jewish saints, many Kedushim, many wonderful Jewish saints, saintly Jews who were murdered. Al Kiddush Hashem, who were murdered sanctifying God's name. Some of the most wonderful Jews spoke Yiddish, a language that was spoken for 1,000 years in Europe. But now is not the time for Yiddish, which is almost like a form of German. Now is not the time for Yiddish. Now is the time for Hebrew. Now is the time for Eretz Yisrael. Now is the time to return to Eretz Yisrael. And there is no reason for Jews to live outside the land of Israel at this time. We're supposed to be living in Eretz Yisrael, and that is a mitzvah. And they didn't even during the Holocaust, they didn't get the message. Even the Holocaust didn't teach them a lesson. The Jews who went to Israel, all the leading rabbis at the time in Europe said, oh no, don't go to Eretz Yisrael. They're crazy. The Michiganers, all crazy. Michiganers is in Yiddish. It means crazy people. Mishugayim in Hebrew. They're all crazy, the ones who want to go to the land of Israel. But meanwhile, the ones who went to the land of Israel, the religious Jews who went to the land of Israel, their children now have huge families and are studying in yeshivot and are light years ahead of the people who were studying in yeshivot in the Galut because they speak the Hebrew language and live in the land of Israel, whereas the Jews who listened and stayed in Europe went to the gas chambers and the ovens, the overwhelming majority of them. So, They don't learn their lesson. They don't want to see that the Galut, the exile, is a graveyard for the Jewish people. It is a graveyard. It is suicide for the Jewish people to remain in the Galut. And Eretz Yisrael is the only place where the Jewish population is growing, where Jews have a lot of babies, or at least religious Jews have a lot of babies, where the yeshiva and Torah world are flourishing, and where there's any hope for Jewish survival. Thank you, Nekama. And now we go on to another great JTFer, Kalman Ben Menachem, who writes, and I quote, Chaim, Rabbi Kahana wrote a book called Why Be Jewish, in which he said that conservative Reform Judaism exists to promote assimilation. What do you think about conservative Reform Judaism, their origins, what they stand for, and the harm that they do and have done? Thank you, unquote. First of all, I don't think it's not Judaism. The conservative and Reform cults do not represent Judaism. They represent assimilationist cults, and they destroyed American Jewry. Millions of Jews assimilated and gave up their Judaism because of this. Millions in the United States, in Europe, around the world. So the destructive effect of these evil movements was just overwhelming. Millions of Jews have intermarried, assimilated, and now are Jewish they produce children and grandchildren who are Jewish anti-Semites, who hate Israel, who hate their own people, who desperately want to escape from their Jewish roots because of these two horrible movements, who have no young people in them left, You go to their so-called, now all they do is play bingo there. They're like mausoleums, big giant empty buildings. They used to have elderly when I was, even when I was a child, all young people had left already. Even when I was a child, and I'm 65 years old. So, you know, this is something, these movements have been dead except among elderly self-hating assimilated Jews. These movements have been dead now for 50 years at least. And now they're certainly dead. And they're just used as an excuse for people who want to claim that they're still Jewish and claim a certain level of observance even though they don't want to really be Jewish at all. There's only one Torah Judaism. The Torah is true Judaism. And if you don't believe that the Torah was given to the Jews by Hashem, by God, and that everything in the Torah is divinely inspired, and everything in the Tanakh, the Bible, is divinely inspired. If you don't believe in that, and you don't believe also in the oral law, which is the Talmud, the Mishnah, if you don't believe in those things, then you don't believe in Judaism. Very simple. You could have been born Jewish, you're born Jewish, you're still a part of the Jewish people because you were born a Jew, but you're not, if you don't believe in those things, you don't believe in Judaism, you are rejecting Judaism. And the conservative and reform movements do not believe in that. You have, by the way, conservative and reform so-called rabbis who are atheists. You have conservative and reform so-called rabbis who are homosexuals and lesbians. You have conservative and reform so-called rabbis who perform intermarriages and just every abomination under the sun they support. Just evil. These movements represent evil. Thank you, Kalman. And now we go on to another great JTFer, Baltimore, who writes, and I quote, one, thoughts on Daniela Weiss. Okay. And I know it's Weiss in English, but there is no W sound in Hebrew, so in Hebrew it's Daniela Weiss. I used to like Daniela Weiss because I thought that she was a right-wing person, but she's not. Not at all. Daniela Weiss is part of the phony right. She's part of the Escher Council, and she has been a strong supporter of the Likud and of Benjamin Netanyahu. She helped Benjamin Netanyahu win the election in 2015, which was a disaster for Jews. It was bad for Jews that he won that election. And Daniela Weiss organized the weekend before the election. The voting was on Tuesday, and the weekend before the election, I think it was on Sunday, she organized a mass rally. She organized it. She was the leader and the initiator. A mass rally in support of Netanyahu, with Netanyahu speaking and Naftali Bennett speaking, but it really benefited Netanyahu. A giant rally for him. And that was what gave him the boost that enabled him to win in 2015. So she's done a lot of harm because Benjamin Netanyahu froze all Jewish building in Judea and Samaria and Jerusalem. We could have had many, many more Jews living there. But because of leaders like her and like the Escher Council who have gone along with the Likud government freezing Jewish building in Judea, Samaria, and Jerusalem, they've gone along with this. And they recently caved in again in Efrat. There was a community that they were building in Efrat. The government came and said, we're going to destroy it. And they gave in. They gave in. And I don't think very much is going to come of that agreement. I think it was a mistake. But Daniela Weiss represents the policies of surrender and of the phony right. Baltimore Jew now writes, too, the Hebron Fund, appears to be doing good work. You know of them, unquote. Yes, they're also part of the establishment. I don't like the establishment, Baltimore. The establishment has let us down. We have lost battle after battle, from Gush Katif to Migron, one battle after another of expulsions and Amonah and other and terrible problems that we've had. Beit El, where many Jews have been expelled, and there have been a freeze on Jewish building, and the Jewish establishment has not done a good job. Now Hebron Fund. The Hebron Fund is part of the establishment in Hebron, so they are more right-wing, supposedly. but they're really also establishment people when it comes down to it. I just don't think they're the answer, and I don't think that they're offering Jews a real alternative. 3, cryptocurrency makes it easy for anyone in the world to support the Hilltop Youth. Have you or they considered making it part of fundraising efforts? Thanks. Unquote. Baltimore, I don't know how it works. I have no idea. I'm completely ignorant about this. I have no idea how this works, and I don't know how it would work. If it would help with fundraising efforts, I would love to learn and find out about it. But I just don't understand how it works. I don't know. I've never researched or understood. So I apologize for my complete and abysmal ignorance. Thank you, Baltimore, for the questions. And now we go to David 2, who writes, and I who's a longtime viewer of our programs, and he writes, and I quote, Chaim Ben Shapiro released a list in 2018 of retractions, link. And there's a link here, okay, all right. I can't go to the link right now, but okay. I think I know some of the retractions on my own. There are probably others that I don't know. Should his cowardice raise alarms for his supporters? David writes. Ben Shapiro apologized to the Jewish Nazi, George Soros, for calling him a capo, even though he was. George Soros, the multi-billionaire who funds every anti-Israel organization, every organization that's committed to destroying Israel, George Soros is there funding them and supporting them and backing them in the land of Israel. Anything he can do to undermine Israel and hurt Israel and help the Arabs to destroy Israel, he does. He funds Arab causes. He funds bringing illegal immigrants, illegal aliens from Africa into Israel, as many as possible. He funds every organization that is bad and that is harmful and is cancerous. He funds them and supports them. And aside from that, aside from the fact that he's a complete traitor as far as Israel and the Jewish people are concerned, now, when he was 14 years old, he helped the German Nazis. He helped the German Nazis during the Holocaust, and he didn't feel any he didn't think there was any problem with that. He didn't feel any conscience problems or other problems. He said, if I didn't do it, somebody else would have done it. Which is something that the German Nazis themselves said, even the German Nazi war criminals said, if we didn't do it, they would have put somebody else to do it. So we did it. You know, just a low life, the lowest of the low. It's impossible to even imagine a traitor more vicious than him. And Ben Shapiro apologized to this monster. Ben Shapiro apologized for supporting the transfer of Arabs, and he constantly uses the word Palestinian, gets on my nerves. I can't stand the people use that term because it's a lie. It's a historic lie. There has never been a Palestine or a Palestinian people. These are Arabs who are part of the giant Arab world. There is no separate Palestinian people ever. But Ben Shapiro used the word Palestinian over and over again and apologizes for supporting the transfer of them. In other words, he supported moving them out of Israel, which was a good position, but now he's become politically correct and he doesn't want to do that. In other words, he's a wimp who wants to keep whatever platform he has and doesn't want to be barred or banned. And the price that he's willing to pay is that here's the damage that he does. When you have somebody like him, who is considered to be right-wing and pro-Israel and wears a kippah on his head, when you have somebody like him saying now that, saying the things that he says in violation of basic Torah principles, apologizing to traitors, praising traitors, taking back positions like transfer of Arabs from Israel, you know what happens? Then the right-wing Jews begin to think, you know what? Maybe we shouldn't be supporting these things. Maybe we shouldn't. Maybe we should respect self-hating Jews like George Soros. Maybe we shouldn't be. Maybe we should not be. Maybe it's unrealistic, as as Ben Shapiro said, he said it's unrealistic to transfer the Arabs out of Israel. It's unrealistic to keep them there. It's not unrealistic to transfer them out. It's unrealistic to keep them there. But when he makes these arguments, and very persuasively, that it's unrealistic and it's impractical and we shouldn't be doing this, he convinces people. And so his the effects of what he does, it's more destructive than what the left does. So it should alarm people who support him, and nobody should support him. Thank you very much, Dovid. And we go on now to Chicago Jew, who is a longtime JTFer, who writes, and I quote, "I am pro-Chinese vaccine, anti-mandatory vaccine, anti-mask, anti-vaccine passport. I'm vehemently against any business, including the government and employers, forcing me to wear a mask or asking me for proof that I've been vaccinated. It's no one's business," unquote. Chicago Jew, I disagree with you. Because the unvaccinated are the ones that are making people sick. And my mother got infected from someone who was unvaccinated, who believed the propaganda and was unvaccinated. And my mother paid with her life. And I mean, we've had a situation here where over 4.5 million people worldwide, at least over 4.5 million people have died because of COVID-19, at least. And the figure is almost certainly much higher because you have a tremendous deliberate undercount in China, India, Russia, and other countries. They don't give you accurate counts. So it's a much higher figure. They admit that it's over 4.5 million. They admit this. Even with the official phony undercount, it's over 4.5 million. So it's probably about 10 million, maybe more. But millions of people have died. In the United States alone, there have been 675,000 deaths. 675,000 deaths. Tens of millions of Americans have been infected. Many of them still have symptoms and are ill and have problems. And 675,000 have died. If you want to commit suicide, it's a big question as whether or not we should allow somebody to commit suicide. Under Jewish law, people are not allowed to commit suicide. We're not allowed to allow them to. But it's even worse when you're willing to endanger others. Unvaccinated people pose a danger to everyone around them. Unvaccinated people are the reason we still have this virus. California, that left-wing commie state, but nevertheless a state where they had an intensive vaccination program, now has the lowest COVID infection rate, hospitalization rate, death rate, the lowest, all the stats. California now is the lowest in the country because they had a very vigorous vaccination program. Texas and Florida, which where the governors there are saying, oh, we can't have masks, we can't have masks and other mandatory things. There, that's where the virus is the strongest and the most deadly. And places like Mississippi and Alabama, where there are a lot of unvaccinated people, is where the death rate and the hospitalization rate is the highest. It's the unvaccinated who are driving this virus. In Israel, four days ago, they just came out with another report that 85% of the people in Israel who are hospitalized with coronavirus are unvaccinated. 85% are unvaccinated, even though the unvaccinated are only 15% of Israel's adult population. They're 15% of the adult population has refused to get the vaccination, and 85% of the people that are hospitalized. I mean, there's no question that they're the ones who are creating this illness. And the problem is, they're not only infecting other unvaccinated people, they're infecting the vaccinated as well. Because even someone who's vaccinated is under risk. If they're really constantly, or if they're around somebody who's not going to wear a mask and not going to socially distance and not going to do anything, they're creating a risk. That's creating a risk. And even vaccinated people should wear masks. And there's no question that masks are effective. There's no question that in countries like Taiwan, where they traditionally wore masks for years, the rate of hospitalization and death was much lower because they wore masks, even before we had the vaccines. The masks are effective. That there's no question about it. One of the reasons we have infections is because people go to gatherings where people are not masked. You say it's no one's business, but it is my business if you're going to put my life in jeopardy. And if I have a business, if I have a store, if I have a grocery store or a supermarket or a bank or any other place, a drugstore, any other place, if I have a store and you're going to come in and infect me and infect my employees with a deadly virus, you don't have a right to do that. And I have a right to say, no, you're not coming into my store unless you wear a mask or unless you've been vaccinated. I have a right to do that. And the government does have a right to say to its employees, you are not going to endanger your fellow workers and you're not going to endanger other people when you deal with the public. This is a matter of life and death. And by the way, we have requirements now for children with vaccinations. Children who are not vaccinated against the flu, who don't get their flu shots and they don't get other vaccinations, are not allowed to go to school for many years now, because we know what the consequences were when they weren't vaccinated. So this is not new. So I disagree with you, Chicago Jew. And we go on now to the great Nachus, who is a really great JTFer, who writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, good to see, ask JTF again, do you think the idiotic Netanyahu-Trump accords will, God willing, be eventually dismantled, unquote? Well, certainly when the Mashiach comes, when the Messiah comes, they certainly will be dismantled. Will they be dismantled in the near future? I don't see it. Unfortunately, I think that the agreements that Israel made with Persian Gulf countries will not be dismantled unless the Persian Gulf countries back out under pressure from other Arab Muslims who are less clever and less intelligent and who say, what, you're a traitor, you make agreement with Zionists, with Jews, you're a traitor. You know, hopefully, never underestimate the ability of stupid Arabs to save us. But never overestimate it either, because we can't rely on that, because sometimes the Arabs get smart and that's when we're in danger, that's when we're in trouble. When they want to make agreements with us, that's when we're really in danger. But I don't know. In the near future, I don't know what will be. But of course, eventually, when the Mashiach comes, when the Messiah comes, all evil agreements with evil nations and evil people will be abolished. Thank you very much, Nachas. And now we go on to Am Rafael, who, another JTFer that we're happy to see here, who writes, and I quote, Chag Sameach Chaim, what sources, American and Israeli, do you recommend? Is it possible for you to make more videos weekly? We need more of you, unquote. Well, thank you very much. First of all, Chag Sameach to you and to all of our JTFers and to all of Am Yisrael, to the whole Jewish people. Chag Sameach means happy holiday, and also, of course, Moadim Lesimcha. News sources, American, Israeli, do I recommend? Oh, that's really, really hard. I don't like making recommendations if I don't agree with what they're. How many sites do I agree with? So, you know, because then people will go to it and say, oh, this is a good site. Even Chaim Ben Pesach, even he thinks it's a good site. So, you know, that's what concerns me. I don't want to encourage Jews and righteous Gentiles to go to places where they might find something that is missing, where they might find misinformation and believe it. And so I'm always worried about doing that. So I don't know what sites to recommend. There are a couple of sites in Hebrew, but they're not in English. so, you know, I really don't know. I really don't have any sites. I mean, people should keep up with the news. They should go to Arutz 7, Arutz Sheva is Arutz 7. It's one of the sites. It's an Israeli site, but a lot of the stuff on there is garbage. They should go, but they should be aware of the fact that a lot of the stuff they're going to see, even on so-called right-wing websites, a lot of it is garbage. They have to be aware of that. But they also have to keep informed. So people should go, keep informed, but always look at everything with a very wary eye. Always have a wary eye when people say something. You should have a wary eye even when Chaim ben Pesach and JTF says something, because we could be wrong. You know, we're human beings. Human beings can be wrong. But at least with us, you know, we're not going to compromise and we're not going to betray our principles. But still, human beings can be wrong. So you should always double check and always be very concerned about the accuracy of what you're seeing and about always wherever you go. Is it possible for me to do more videos weekly? I don't know. That I don't know. I'm not sure, but I thank you for the request. Thank you, Am Raphael. And let me see here what we got here. Well, I want to thank all of our great JTFers again for another week of questions, and I hope we at least answered some of your questions. I apologize for the fact that in some cases I didn't have answers or didn't know the answers. When I don't, I just don't. We do the best we can here, but we don't always have answers to every question, and I apologize for that. But we certainly always want to continue to speak to our fellow JTFers and to offer people the option of asking questions. If you have seen this program and you would like to ask a question, all you have to do is sign up on the JTF forum. You have to go to jtf.org and you go to the link that says forum and you sign up on the forum, or you can go directly to the forum, jtf.org/F, and you'll get to the English language forum. And in the forum, you go to the general discussion section, and there's a thread there where you can ask questions. But you have to sign up, which I think takes just a few minutes. You just sign up, and then you can ask questions on the forum. And we certainly welcome your questions, and we welcome you to JTF. For JTF, until next week, this is Chaim ben Pesach.